working.
My audio is working because I've had all day to tinker with it.
Ah, okay.
Just waiting That's on why. A baby.
Just waiting on a baby.
Waiting on a baby.
Oh, so, boy.
So it turns out I do have an anchor thing. That's what my little thing is right here.
Of course, you have an anchor thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't realize what the name of it was. Like, it just thought it was just like some generic like iPhone stand.
Oh, hang on. Wait, you mean like one of these?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Oh.
They're like a gift from some place or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but Matt, that one isn't a charging station as well.
I beg to differ. You've got no proof.
not only does it charge your phone wireless, but it's wireless itself.
Exactly. Yeah. For those not zooming in on this medium, I just held up a tiny plastic little red hat stand. I'm like, it's a charging dock. What are you talking about?
So the original Pixels, Google actually sent all the Pixel owners a Lego phone holder that you'd like make out of Lego. It was really cool.
That's pretty cool.
I am not going to spend $100 on a stand for my VR set.
Dude, it's a charger thing though.
But it's a USB-C charger that I can just plug into the wall. Like, why do I? Yeah, I do not need this.
Because then you have your Oculus just lying around to be knocked off something or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not convinced.
I'm not convinced by Oculus in general. So maybe we need to start there.
Wait, you don't want Facebook to know intimate details about your VR porn watching habits?
No, only Google and Apple can know that. I don't trust Facebook.
I mean, we already let half of them know your retina prints. So
yeah,
I actually haven't been able to figure out how to do the whole porn thing on the Oculus yet. I actually tried, and I'm like, this isn't actually easy to do. There's not like an app or anything you install. It's not obvious. So I dropped that and I started playing Resident Evil 4.
That's the same thing. You can jerk off to Resident Evil.
That's true.
I mean, in one of them you have a flashlight, the other one you have a fleshlight. It's the same thing.
There you go.
A lot of rotting corpses.
Does rigor mortis make you hard?
Oh, jeez.
Just stop.
We just opened that one up, didn't we?
I feel like there'll be some edits made to this section of the podcast.
Maybe.
Maybe one can never hope too hard. So Oculus, isn't it just like highly, is it still pretty pixelated? Or like if you compare it to playing a modern game console like a PS5, how's it do graphics wise?
Well, for me, I'm still in the world of like, I think of like Xbox, like the original Xbox, and maybe Nintendo Switch is like the advanced graphics in my mind, right?
That's somewhat depressing, but okay, it's a point of reference. Yeah.
So like for me to get the Oculus on, it was like me playing in real what I was remembering Resident Evil 4 to be like and be able to move around, and it was really fast. But I will say I tried to use Tabletop Simulator, pushing it through a remote desktop off of a laptop with a like an older graphics card on it, and it looked like shit. It was really bad. So
is that because there's not a native app for it on the Oculus? You have to sort of piggyback it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to use the Steam VR thing. Mm-hmm. And that took a few minutes to figure out how to get that shit working. Which was kind of not frustrating. Mm-hmm. Just like if I was not as nerdy as I am, I could see myself being like, well, I guess I got an Oculus to watch movies and play golf, right? Like that's all I can really do. Like the metaverse is a joke.
You're a joke, sir.
Well, like I went to go try to find one of those concerts or whatever inside the metaverse just to be like, hey, I know this hip hop artist. I'll go listen to them. That's cool. So I went into the metaverse. I went into their like the replay of it. I sat down, or I didn't really sit down. I was already sitting. And it was like, he was like 30 feet tall and like doing his thing, but it was nothing. Like, there was no crowd, nothing. And there was this weird spider in the background that was doing like this weird dance. And I was just like, yeah, it was a spider.
Are you sure this wasn't like a fever dream or something? Right? Like, the way you're describing it, either you were high or you were having a fever dream. That's kind of what it sounds like.
Oh, you got the opium download.
Okay.
That's an third party add on to the Oculus. Really gets now you we in know. The zone.
Now we know.
Yep. It was weird.
It sounds weird.
Yeah. That was my experience with it.
Anyone else played around with VR systems?
Yeah, I've played with one. I played with one a few years ago, back when they started opening random like VR places. You'd go and pay like $10 to play a bunch of VR games. And, you know, there's the, I do enjoy that classic one, the Walk the Plank one, where if you haven't played it, you basically put a, like a plank of 2x4 down on the ground. It like tells you where to put it. And then inside the game, it basically, you press a button, it takes you up an elevator and you come out on a rooftop and there's a plank sticking out from the edge of the roof that is perfectly lined up with the 2x4 you've put down. And so you have to step on it and walk along the plank. And so you're actually walking along the plank at like this ridiculously tall skyscraper in the game. And it's just interesting because the real world and the virtual world line up and you actually feel the plank under your feet. It's like super, like people would like not be able to do it because it was that real enough in their heads.
Wow.
And you'd get all the vertigo and everything. And then, so when you do it, you walk to the end and then of course you're supposed to jump off, which you're jumping off like an inch, right? But in the game, you're jumping off like 80 stories or whatever the. Yeah. But it's like, it's a really good way to understand that even though the graphics aren't incredible, the immersion of it, it is still like, it's 100% tricking your brain.
That's cool. That's a good way to frame it. I think I was just looking at raw graphics when looking at consoles. And I think gaming since I was young and getting every console along the way when I could, I wasn't impressed from the start. I played a bunch of VR like when they were, in like there's some place in Mall of America that has a bunch of them and they're just like it feels like a half-assed version of Big Buck Hunt kind of a vibe or something like that, and you're like, I'll just take the old console or the old stand and shoot version anytime until we really get into it where you're like you feel immersed in some Ready Player One level dystopian future type of energy.
I want to play the Half-Life game and see how that is. I don't know if they're out for the Oculus yet.
It is.
Because it is. Yeah, because I know it was out for the Steam VR thing originally.
Oh, wait. No. You have to do it through Steam VR.
Right.
So you need.
I don't want to go. I don't want to fight hooking up a PC to a 3D card to then hook up to the. I just want whatever it is to play through the Oculus.
They are going to release this year Grand Theft Auto San Andreas for the Oculus. Quest 2. So
that would be fun.
Yeah. So basically, another game that I completed. I haven't completed many games in my life, but I did complete San Andreas because I fell in love with it. So being able to play that first person and running around, that's gonna be fun. They did.
Go ahead.
But and the other thing they released over the break, or at least they had on sale, is Doom 3. Where the side quest system, where you do kind of like the homebrew stuff, you can dump the pack files into the quest and run the homebrew start builder thing. And it's fully done Doom 3. So you can play Doom 3 like you did back in the day on the screen, but immersed, which is pretty cool. I haven't tried that yet, but I've got it all set up. I just haven't sat down and decided, you know, shit myself playing that game because it's very scary. It's very, very scary.
Yeah, I did a couple of years ago. I did one of those like VR playgrounds in Vegas where the full real world matches the game world. And so one of them was a Star Wars game where you play as a stormtrooper. And like the first thing you do is it like you have a briefing, and at the end of the briefing, it tells you to go pick up a weapon, and you walk over to a like a gun rack, and you actually pick up a physical gun from the gun rack that is in the same place in the physical and virtual world. And then there's a few things, like there's a spot where you're on like a moving platform that's going over the top of lava, and it like blows like warm air up. So you kind of get the like the sensation of like the warm air coming up from the lava. And then you'll pull a switch, and there's like an actual switch on the wall that matches with it. And it, it was a lot of fun.
That is neat.
Yeah.
Augmented reality and virtual at the same time, I guess. Yeah.
But I think it's augmented virtual reality. Because augmented reality, you're overlaying, right? Whereas this was,
No, the direction matters. You're right. Well, that's nice.
There's a, so if you are interested in playing golf with me on Oculus, hit me up on the Slack. I don't have any friends either. But it'd be nice to have people play golf with.
Are we still talking about
in the metaverse or in the real world?
Yeah, exactly.
It's got dark.
can you play your chess.com in VR?
Actually, so funny thing, I started looking into building, I actually sent chess.com a tweet being like, hey, so the built-in browser works fine inside of VR. Like I can have three games going all up in front of me where I'm just moving the chess pieces around. And I was like, well, you know, all you gotta do is now make a 3D world, take those same APIs, put them in front of people, and all of a sudden just move the pieces. Like that's like an afternoon at a VR, someone professionally does VR coding. They could easily build this whole world where you can
an
sit.
An afternoon, huh?
Well, I mean, it's
easy, default. Right? Couldn't they just...
Well, there's a lot of demo runs out there. Like I looked into this. Like it's basically a demo world you can get where you just put this thing on top of it and you're done. Because it's just a table and a square. Like it's really there's really not a lot of coding involved in this at all.
So how long until we have visual coding in VR?
I think it already exists.
You know, like unplug here, plug this in over here, and suddenly that's like changing the routing of the circuit.
The if or else statement.
The if or the, or, yeah, I know. Like instead of these virtual circuits, we're going to have virtual circuits.
Well, they got the AR stuff with the Unity stuff. You know, you can take a picture of the AR, the Unity switch with your phone, where it can tell you exactly what it is, and then move that. I mean, that's pretty damn close. That's pretty close.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, not exactly right, but close. Let's see. There's one other thing I was going to show, but I can't seem to find it. God damn, whatever. Cool. Well, so that was my break playing around with this stuff.
Fun. Anyone else get some good things in over the break?
Just chilled.
Yeah, seeing head shakes.
No, COVID.
So. Oh, you had COVID? I'm so sorry.
I did not have COVID. I was the only one in the entire family that did not get COVID.
Oh, dang.
I got very lucky that I think it was the booster, but my partner tested positive. His whole family that we were visiting tested positive. And
the dogs?
I didn't test the dogs. I suppose I should have, but I didn't.
No, I'm just messing around.
good luck nasal swabbing those things.
We train them to do their medical stuff. They opt in. It's interesting.
Yeah, if you were closer, you'd be training my dog too, but that sucks.
Meanwhile, JJ can't even train his dog not to murder his children.
Yeah,
it's true.
True. I fully expected to see like a kid getting dragged by a dog in the background while Laura was saying that. It's like, okay, at least it's not after me right now.
Exactly. Oh, it's like, gosh. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, I think the most like the happiest thing this way, it's pretty quiet. We're on kind of, you know, March 2020 level lockdown while we're waiting for baby to be born. But I got back into ramen a good bit. I started making some tares again, like the flavor bombs at the base of your soup. Nice. And read the Book of Ramen, which is this free 100-page, very like sciencey guide to how to make all the different elements of ramen by the guy who goes by Ramen Lord, Michael Santori. No, I messed it up, but he's wonderful. He shares a lot of brilliant stuff on Reddit. And I just had a ton of fun again, remembering that like there's these building blocks that I realized for me kind of build up in the sense that feels very object-oriented programming, mm-hmm. and where like there's inheritance of things and you start to understand the inheritance of different objects and like the objects fit together in a meaningful way. And yeah. Just thought it was fun to learn.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but it's totally like a composable thing, right? You have all these different building blocks and you can compose them together in different ways and get the slightly different results.
So yeah,
have you got like a go-to tare recipe right now?
Totally. Yeah, I've been going with this kind of basic red miso tare, or it's predominantly red miso, and the red's nice because it's like really, really rich. Mm-hmm. And really flavorful, and you can soften it up with some white miso paste, and then there you use about half an onion pureed that you saute and get a little of the liquid out of it, but also add some additional char to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some mirin for sweetness, some dark soy sauce to give it some richness, a little bit of sesame oil. And I've put a little cayenne and or some sort of spicy thing in there to give it a little zing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it turns into like this. I tried a red pepper recently, like added half a red pepper in there pureed as well. And that was really fun. I love there's something about red peppers that are just magically flavorful mm-hmm. when they're sauteed as well.
Yeah.
So some, but those are the base elements for sure. It's super good. Yeah.
And then I think I saw you actually did a tonkotsu broth. So you like boiled the bones until they emulsified the fat. And
yeah. Yeah. That was really cool. So I went to a new Asian market and I wasn't planning on doing this, but I walked past the meat section and like right next to chicken breasts and stuff, there was piles of pork bones and pork neck and mm-hmm. also intestines and feet and stuff. And I was like, hell yes. So I bought like 5 pounds of pork bones and some trotters and added a bunch of vegetables later on in it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was gonna go like the full recipe I found calls for 18 hours of mm-hmm. of cooking it, and I didn't quite have that in me, so I cut it in half. And but I got like a really rich, really almost white. I could have done some better cleaning on the front side.
I was going to ask you about the cleaning. Did you blanch them and then clean them?
I blanched them. So for those who are less familiar, a tonkotsu broth is usually this like really milky white, rich broth that's really popular in the United States in particular. And the tricks I've read about getting it the cleanest is like there's a soaking overnight ahead of time and draining it and then blanching it. And then you can even bake it to like to get a little bit more out and then cook with it. But I just did the blanching and got a lot of stuff out, but it was still like a little colored from the blood. Yeah. Have you messed around with those, Paul?
I haven't done a tonkotsu for a while just because it is a lot of messing around. And like, I don't know, I feel it's a little bit overdone. And I kind of enjoy the lighter broths, which you sort of like a light stock that's like half chicken stock, half dashi, you know, that kind of thing. And then just kind of use some good soy and stuff to kind of add some saltiness to it or whatever. So that's kind of my go-to because you can do that like quick and easy.
Yeah. And it's really good. And, right. You know, it definitely, the more I get into it, the more I realize you can hide a lot of sin with just over-flavoring, and that's mm-hmm. fun. you know, JJ, I feel like if you ever want to mess around with ramen, like a miso ramen with like a tonkatsu type broth, and you're like, you can't screw it up. It's going to be delicious. It's like those pull apart ribs you made. Nice. It's just like, it's so decadent. You can't not like it, but to get the really delicate flavors in like a light shoyu soup and tare, like I haven't quite mastered that. I want to mess around with that next. Super fun. I want to cook for you all someday. That'd be fun adventure if each of us like cook for the other three, have like a little bit of
it'd be entertaining.
Yeah. Be entertaining. Be a good weekend. You can think about it.
Oh, well, Laura, we're allowed to travel again, right?
There we go.
Yeah. Well, when it we're allowed to. Just we're all smart enough not
probably
to.
Probably don't
a little
want
bit.
To. That's yeah. more really the kind of the question here of whether you actually would want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got some international acceptances. For the first half of this year already. Even a couple keynotes. And I'm like,
wow.
Yeah, I haven't set up the travel yet because I mean the world, right? Like doesn't
so
seem
like
when
and where
idea.
I'm really curious about the details.
Two of them are in England, and I've got I'm on the talket for I forget now. Anyway, point being is it's there in Europe. They're in Europe, and I don't feel like going to Europe is a smart move right now.
I mean, it's too late to try and be smart. It's endemic now. It's not a pandemic, and we're all going to get it, and it's going to be like the flu. It would be nice to wait a bit longer until the viral treatments are a bit more proven out. But at this point, I mean, everyone still has to decide for themselves, but I'm starting to get to the point of like, just be smart and you're probably fine, and be vaccinated. Get a fourth booster as soon as you can, probably get the other one so you're not all the same. And
just live.
I mean, there's, you know, interesting health complications for some folks and whatever, and that's going to change their equations. But
yeah, it's like the whole fuzzy brain thing, or what they're calling quote unquote long COVID, where we don't know the damage that can happen, right? Like we're still in reactive mode in general. And like I'm a type 1 diabetic, as I've said many times, and I, from what I understand, especially with this variant out with Omicron right now, it's not even the COVID variant that's the problem. It's all the stuff underneath it that the doctors are seeing. They're exasperating people's already disadvantages and medical issues. So for instance, as a type 1 diabetic, they're seeing ketoacidosis, people coming in with ketoacidosis where they just can't control their blood sugar because COVID has just knocked the crap out of them. And wow. I'm privileged enough to be on a CGMS, which is a continuous glucose monitor, which is that little pump that ever you see me bring up and I hit that button all the time. It's telling me I need to change my insulin intake. But there's a lot of people out there who can't afford these things. And I can only imagine the nightmare that they're going through. And if I can pull myself out of society longer to not be in that, and then, you know, only be around people I truly, truly trust instead of, you know, a bunch of nerds in a conference center. Not that I don't like being around a bunch of nerds in a conference center.
Yeah. It's kind of our careers.
Yeah. there's some nerds in those conference centers that I don't want to spend time with. If I can pull myself out of that to be safer in the long term, seems like a reasonable thing to me. But anyway, you see what I'm saying? I don't know. I'm babbling.
I'm hearing you loud and clear, JJ, on the, you know, I think there, this comes down to like the emotional fatigue of it. And when we get fatigued, they're like the cognitive frame that we have it in tends to take over. There's like a, I was reading about like substitution bias. Like when we don't know an answer to the problem of how risky is this, we substitute something that we can calculate. Like a common thing you think of when you're thinking about risk, like the probability replacement is like a coin flip. I either get it or I don't. you like reduce it down to a 50-50 probability. But then you're like, well, if you're rolling a die, you either get it or you don't, but it's still a 1 in 6 chance. So it's not, so like, what is the real risk? I'm really glad this came up because I came across the Micro COVID project. It is a risk tracking project out of Berkeley, California, and it's designed kind of for pods to be able to calculate their collective risk. And I made a copy of the spreadsheet that they built. You can go to the link I shared. It's microcovid.org, and actually play around with the details. And you can see the difference of like, if you go to the grocery store with Pfizer and two different doses of it, and you have a cloth mask on versus an KN95 mask on, and they'll give you a relative probability of how exposed you are. You know, like all probabilities, 1 in 1,000,000 or 1 in 10 or 1 in 2, you can still get zapped. You can still get sick, and that there is a risk associated with every time you go out. But for me, this is really comforting because it gives me a reasonable comparison point of saying, is going to a gym as risky as going grocery shopping, or is it more? Or when a family member says, oh, I just went out to dinner, you know, my rapid test shows that I'm not sick, everything should be fine. I can say like, yeah, but it's this much more risk to us, and we can't take that risk this week because we have a risk budget of X.
Yeah.
Have you all messed with anything like this? Because this was new to me. And
no, this is brand new to me. And I was just looking up like a standard like hour long grocery shopping trip, and it's interesting. Like, you know, masked and vaccinated, assuming that most other people are also wearing masks, it comes up as a moderate risk. But the moment you drop your vaccination off, it becomes like high risk. The moment you drop to either not having a mask or other people not having a mask, the risk goes way up. So it's from like a moderate risk all the way to like 8 times your risk budget just by changing like if people around you are wearing masks or not and some other bits of things.
Yeah, but on the positive side as well, something that felt very empowering was looking at, I changed my mask to an N95. I was able to get a couple,
right?
And putting an N95 on, even I said not sealed because I'm not sure if I'm sealing it completely, I dropped like most of my activity dropped from moderately risky to like not a risk. That was the thing that finally clicked to me. I found myself getting complacent or just fatigued, right? Like, to be kind about it. Like, it's so hard to care all the time about everything. So I'm just like, I have a mask, I put a mask on, but not all masks are equal. Right. And with these numbers in front of me, I realized like, if I go rock climbing, it's only a small risk if I stay away from people. And if I let people within a 6-foot bubble, that makes it much more risky. And like, it just kind of gives me some variables to work with, as opposed to just like this endemic, exhausting, confusing decision we're making all the time. So I hope it's helpful for you all.
Yeah.
I'm still stuck on how you got rapid tests. I didn't know those existed.
Oh, dude.
The joke being they're impossible to find in Austin.
So I'm gonna tell you, I was able to get a whole bunch, but like enough for the two of us for like 3 tests maybe. So believe it or not, because we are near Amazon warehouses, you can get the Amazon tests. Amazon actually has their own little box that is the Amazon PCR test that you can do at home and send off to the same lab they get for their workers. I guess they decided to start selling it, but also On Go on Amazon, they actually, they're shipping directly from where they make it in Chicago. So they were turning around. For context, I found all of these because of when Landon's family all got sick and Landon got sick. It was one of these, like, we were sitting there in their kitchen because we were in Memphis, and like, you're not escaping immediately. That's not happening. So we were sitting there and I was just poking through OnGo didn't show like immediate delivery, but it was like January 4th to January 11th. And I was shopping on like December 27th. It came on January 4th. Or actually, no, came January 2nd. So like it got here really fast. The other one is, believe it or not, the Binax Now ones, they're on Amazon and they were delivering. I got them within 2 days. So, but also I'm going to give away the, if you want a 2-hour rapid PCR test, Curative is the company here in Austin. If you go there and specifically on their search, you search for it. The Leander one had no one waiting.
Oh, wow.
No one. I got the test the next day. No one was waiting and we heard within an hour. So that's how I know I was negative and he was positive. So, it's worth knowing about, like, it's worth searching them now so that then when you need it, you can immediately go deal with it. So maybe that's just me. I found them though.
That's awesome. I drove to every suburb. Adele and I teamed up. She was calling Walgreens and CVS's and I was just driving to them. And so it took about 3 hours of going around and finally found a place in a suburb of Minnesota that doesn't believe in COVID. Yeah. And I took full advantage of it. I still left some on the shelf, but I took a few for us. So we've got like six more if we need them.
Yeah. I figured that it's like, you know, I'm not going to stockpile in the sense of like having 20 in the house, but like I want enough to be able to test us twice. Mm-hmm. Each of us twice. So, because that's what you're supposed to do with the antigen test is test once, a couple days later, test again. So I figured having those and then having one PCR test to mail off each was perfect. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting thing we're all concerned with, you know, an interesting thing we're all thinking about.
Yeah. Does come back to like, hopefully this gets so easy to test for that it becomes less of a challenge. And I just want to say, I don't disagree with like where you end up, Paul, that I think we will all eventually get this at this point. And at the same time, like being aware of how overrun our local hospitals are, like I still think even if I wasn't worried about a baby coming into this world right now, I'd still be pretty locked down just given that it's a risk to not just me. It's like somebody else being able to go to the hospital when they need to.
Yeah.
Which sucks. I don't want us to have to think about this anymore, but that is where we're at. I mean,
Walmart's raising their prices on their tests. You see that?
Supply and demand, motherfucker.
Exactly. Yeah. Like capitalism,
I guess, will kill us.
Capitalism.
All.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess the thing that I kind of want to bring up as maybe a slight point of hope is, so Memorial Day last year, like mid 2020, I can't remember. Like I had a section of the family that were very much COVID is a joke. We don't need masks. Like, why do we even have these things? It doesn't matter. I'm not getting vaccinated. That's a scam, blah, blah, blah. Right. Like the whole nine yards, eating, drinking the Kool-Aid, the whole thing. But seeing those folks over the holidays, half of them were vaccinated and all of them were wearing heavy duty masks.
Nice.
So
that's encouraging.
People are starting to really see that it's a problem. I wish they had figured this out earlier, but.
Right. Yeah. Some of the numbers floating around are crazy right now, like 700,000 a day in the US, trending upwards. I think
we hit a million.
We might hit a million if we haven't already.
A million a day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I guess the thing I guess I'm bringing up is like persistent presence without shaming people seems to actually be working. And I'm hopeful, I guess. As hopeful as it's going to seem, that maybe we can get out of this would be nice.
Yeah, the only thing I'm hopeful for is the better treatments.
Leaning on the science. Yeah, leaning on the science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, there are two at least two viral treatments now that are supposed to be pretty effective. They're just not super easy to get.
And yeah. What does that mean exactly, to have a viral treatment?
So what's the thing you take for the Tamiflu, but for COVID?
Tamiflu does fuck all, though.
What? Well, I don't know if to...
Perfect. Right.
Well, hang on. Tamiflu does great for the flu.
Yeah. Well, no. Like, well, I've had it for the flu, and it didn't do anything. Like, if,
well, did you have the flu, or did you have a cold? Yeah. And think you had the flu?
No, my doctor put the thing up my nose and all that shit. Okay.
So here's, okay, because this, I feel like it's one of those things, like, this is why I still don't understand why people went down the whole thing with ivermectin, because ivermectin is is not an antiviral.
Right.
If I remember correctly, it is not an antibacterial. It's the other one. Antiparasitic. Antiparasitic. Like, these are different things. They work on different things. Antivirals are specifically formulated to work on a specific thing, like the spike protein. I don't know exactly what antivirals just like attack, mm-hmm. but they basically connect to specific types of, like, specific parts of the viral cell to neutralize it, mm-hmm. or it breaks it down. I can't remember which method it does. The nice thing is that they're saying that the Omicron variant hasn't changed so significantly that the antiviral that was tested on Delta and Alpha mm-hmm. and all them mm-hmm. still works. But like the Tamiflu, if I remember right, Tamiflu is like formulated for one strain of flu. And if you have a different strain of flu, it doesn't work as well. That's right. The difference.
I think you're right. I think Tamiflu tries to play catch up, but it's always playing catch up. And there's so much flu. Because it's like the flu vaccination, right? The way it works is the Northern Hemisphere gets the Southern Hemisphere's last season and vice versa.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to play catch up from the flu season that's coming up.
Yeah. And I think that's why people were getting so excited about the mRNA vaccines for flu viruses, because it seems like mRNA is able to handle multiple variants. Whereas I think the question with the flu virus vaccines is that, could it do the same thing for the flu? Like, could it keep up faster? Mm. So maybe you don't have to have as many boosters. Well, shots, because technically it's a different shot, I think, every year. So
I'm just going to say, like, y'all are going to start having to take the equivalent of my insulin and non-COVID people or COVID people, the joke being that you have to start
pumps,
taking
my,
every day or whatever, to make sure you're okay again. It was funny, awesome, in my head. It was so funny. It was so great. Being that everyone has to live on medication. Anyway, I tried. You have
like a sad skeleton of a joke there that I'm fully with. Like, the idea that we're all going to be equal on that front, in the sense we'll all have pumps that are pumping more antiviral into our system if it half-lifes at this rate forever.
Y'all missed me. You know you did.
Anyway,
but he was gone.
What are we doing? What are holiday. We all doing for food? Like, anyone? What's this sous vide thing? Someone explain what sous vide is.
So I put this on here because I have to give JJ some shit. So there's
fucking
this...
hate this thing. It's so there's so a device called sous vide that doesn't sous vide. I don't know. I don't think it does.
There's this new like kitchen robot that's showing up at CES and all this stuff. Right. It's a Kickstarter though. It's like a Kickstarter for version 2 of this thing. But supposedly it's like a kitchen robot, but all it really is doing is sous vide. But it's calling it sous vide. SUVIE. And that hurts bad enough.
It's not even doing sous vide, because it's not.
It's no, not. It's, like, I didn't really look at it that closely. I just saw it on Morning
Brew. It's an air fryer.
It's an air fryer.
It's an air fryer?
No.
Then why the hell are they calling it sous vide?
It's a steam oven. It's a very different thing to an air fryer.
Oh, my bad.
So yeah.
Steam ovens can give you a similar thing to sous vide. And a lot of professional kitchens use them, because you can do pretty precise low temperature cooking with them. But it is not sous vide, and it is not air frying. It's its own thing. And so that's me saying it looks like a steam oven from like 20 seconds of looking at their website.
You're living in Super Saiyan time, right? Just going so fast.
Go.
Yeah, no, this really bugs me, because I didn't think it's sous vide and it's called sous vide, and I want to get one for JJ if it wasn't so expensive, just as a joke. It's like, JJ, are you going to sous vide or sous vide tonight?
Oh my goodness. And they have two, they have two things. They have the kitchen robot, and then they also have the starch cooker, which is a rice cooker, but like way more complicated than a rice cooker. And more than $20, which you can buy a perfectly good rice cooker for.
Does it even sing to you like a Ryushi or Zoyushi?
But
probably not.
So here's the thing about this, as like someone who does a ton of meal prepping and all this, they talk about having these like meals that you can put in. So you can like sign up for the meal plan and they will ship you meals and you can put it in. Do you know how tempting this is as like, if you're the person who cooks in the family and you have a family of kids and adults to feed and everything, and you're working full time and like, maybe you don't 100% understand how to use your slow cooker for like good meals. All you make is kind of like soup, but just different versions of soup and stew.
Of course,
like me,
slow cookers don't make good meals.
Well, but
don't start Paul on this. Just, like, just walk past that one. Just walk past it. Just walk
Laura's,
past it.
You're making a great point. Please continue.
So, like, I guess the point that I'm making is I can see how attractive this is, because to be honest with you, when I first heard that pitch, like, because again, I'm just seeing it in a newsletter coming past my inbox in the morning, I was like, oh, that would be so cool, because I don't have time to cook a ton during the week. I'm going to admit that I am that person that if we don't have meals prepped and I don't have my meal plan done and I don't have all of like the meat cooked and everything, I'm probably not cooking a meal and we are eating out because I'm the one who cooks in this house. So like, that's just how it works. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh man, my slow cooker skills are shit and my Instapot skills are even worse. So the idea of something that is not going to be the same pan that I'm constantly cooking in and cleaning every single night would be lovely. But then I saw what it was and I was like, what the hell is this thing?
Now we're one step closer to the cyberpunk dystopia that saw in the 90s. That's that thing that when I saw it was exactly that. Like we saw it in like not Blade Runner, but like the cyberpunky movies where you like put your things in, put your VR set on, eat your food, like sit in your little scoot cube. It's the beginning of that.
All right. So I've been looking at the website for a minute now and I've got a better idea what's going on.
Let's hear it.
It's like a multifunction cooker. So you're putting stuff in frozen and it's saying it's using heated water circulation to thaw your ingredients, right? But it's not obviously circulating that through the water. So there must just be heat nearby, just kind of slowly warming it, which is a bit weird, but whatever, we'll roll with it. Then it switches to roast and steam. So that's where I feel like I was probably spot on saying it's like a steam oven. And then it'll switch to actually do a broil at the end to add some color. So like it switches between modes.
Okay.
So like it'll probably give you a decent cook, but I would bet that if you got the Ninja air fryer with the two side-by-side units, you'd do basically the same thing. You may just not do it from frozen, although you probably would, because you do chips and nuggets in an air fryer from frozen, right?
I meant french fries.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
It's okay. I knew what you meant.
You mean pommes frites?
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. So I feel like there's a couple things we learned. One, fully valid that this is tempting. Laura, I'm with you. I'm only angry about the name. To be fully clear, I'm all for kitchen gadgets. I'm angry about the name. Two, we should talk more about Instant Pot recipes on this here podcast.
I found
a couple that, like, if you would chopping stuff up and throw it together ahead of time, it really is a 20 minute meal.
All right. I have enough.
You look panicked.
Sous vide in general. Like, well, so okay.
What Instant Pot?
I'm gonna tell my close friends here, like and the people who are listening, who I'm gonna pretend aren't actually here. So someone bought that Instant Pot for me as a birthday present, and my immediate reaction was, why are you buying this for me? Is it because I'm a woman?
Oh. Yeah, poor move. What did it come with a side vacuum cleaner?
No, okay. There's a long story there, but it's okay.
Got you.
But like, so anytime I think about this, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I have a lot of resentment around the kitchen because I have this assumption, like people assume that I will cook, and I'm like, no, no, I like cooking, but I actually resent cooking. So I have this love-hate relationship with cooking. So when I got this Instant Pot, I transferred a lot of those feelings to this Instant Pot, but it's my same reaction to sous vide, except sous vide just sounds like stupidity. And then there's this. Don't give me that look, JJ.
I made an amazing chashu, like the marinated pork for ramen. I made a great one with my sous vide. So
I did too.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the sous vide. Okay. No, so Laura, totally valid. And I want to just, commend you for being spiteful on that front. I would, if people expected of me, they could piss right off as well. Yeah, you all know I only like cooking because of Paul for the most part in the last year and a half.
Yeah, I think you actually raised something, and it's a little bit different for you, Laura, than it is for us. And that is like cooking as an like expression and cooking as a chore.
Yeah.
And I think everyone in this chat is definitely into cooking as an expression, right? And I would say none of us are particularly into cooking as a chore. But Laura, you have the
stereotypical more thing often than not. Yeah, more often than not, cooking is a chore for me.
Right.
But when I'm baking, it's actually fun. But that's because it's not
really
getting a meal on the table every night.
And I would say that's probably why you like to do like meal prep and stuff, because you can optimize. So it's like once a week chore versus like every single day chore.
Basically, yeah.
I got it.
And also, I'm sure I actually make good food. Like if I'm like resenting it and I just have to go into the kitchen and cook, I'm not necessarily going to put my best foot forward. I'm just going to get something done so I can go do something else. So, yeah, it's funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah. And so one of the things that is interesting, I find, when it comes to that is people that are into cooking for the expression or trying to optimize it not being a chore tend to be like people get mad at them because they don't do things the right way. Like you see people getting mad at people for using like garlic from a jar, right? Which we all know it's not as good as like hand cutting your own crushed garlic, but at the same time,
I don't got time for that shit.
It's also better than like not using garlic at all. And you know, same goes for so many things. And like using the microwave to steam veggies. Like most people can steam like broccoli in a microwave way better than they'll steam broccoli in a pot over a stove. So like why not do that? Like save the real chorey bits for the stuff that's at least interesting, and steaming vegetables is not interesting, so stick them in the microwave
for hiding
the right amount of time and you're good.
No, like, and in the undying words of E. Hashman, who was on the Kubernetes Bake Off, shaming people for using a microwave is ableist bullshit,
right?
And yep. That will live with me until my dying day. Like if you are not dealing with any sort of physical, you know, limitations to your mobility, you have no idea how nice a microwave is to people that are.
Right.
And even if you're not, like, I think the cooking as a chore and recognizing if I can save 20 minutes and one more dish by using a microwave, I'm sure it's all going to do it.
Yeah. Now, mind you, I also, my mom was not, she will cook and I love her meals, but she's not a cook. So like she kind of did it to get it done. Right. Mm-hmm. But she learned it through home ec. So she did have a lot of things that were like, this is what you learn in home ec. But to be honest, that Not Another Cooking Show, that one that I said is one of my favorite YouTube channels, it's because he's teaching me skills that I don't know, like knife skills. I hate cutting up vegetables, for example. So like I often would just get the stuff that's steamed, it comes out of the freezer, it's done. I don't have to think about it. Or even like butternut squash. We've been having a lot of butternut squash lately, and I can buy it frozen from, you know, cubed, all done. I don't need to do anything. It's because I don't have those knife skills from growing up. Whereas now I'm like learning how not to cut my fingers with the damn knife, which is incessant when before, you know, but I would still cook because that was how I was taught to cook. It's like, you just get it done. And yeah, you might cut your fingers every once in a while, but it's not fun, but you just kind of keep going. Whereas now, like, I'm like, oh, that's how you cut and not catch your fingertips. Like you do it where your knuckles are against the blade, not anyway. Like, that's the kind of stuff that, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't know that, because a lot of, you know, parents are cooking to get it done and they don't teach their kids because they don't know themselves. So it's a bit of a cycle.
That's one of the things that YouTube has made so much easier
for. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Is there's so many people that you can watch that will talk you through how to cut an onion properly with a knife without, like, hurting yourself, that, you know, mm-hmm. do it. Like, there's the tricks. Like, you cut a round bit off something and you put it on that round bit that's now a flat bit, and now the damn vegetable is stable and isn't going to roll around when you're trying to cut it. Like, it's not obvious, but once you know it, like, it suddenly makes cutting things way safer, even if you don't yet have really good knife skills.
Yeah. Or how not to cry when you're cutting an onion.
I mean,
I still haven't mastered that one.
Use a sharp knife and slice, don't cut, or the other way around.
So so the one that I found online that I've been like trying to do is cut. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to cut the right part of the onion off. So there's the two ends of the onion. One of the ends of the onion is what makes you cry, mm-hmm. and the other one isn't. You're shaking mm-hmm. your head at me, but like, it actually worked the last time I did it, and I was like, wow.
I found that ivermectin did the trick.
Yeah, ivermectin.
Sure. Totally. Hands out. Yeah. The only way I stopped crying is with a good shot. And I found that my dog's heartworm medication has plenty of it. So we just, you know, we both pop some heartworm meds and go to town on some caramelized
onions. I just learned
onions.
To wear a face shield the whole time, because then I go to like touch my eyes and it doesn't work.
I just do it with my eyes closed.
There you go. There you go. For anybody listening to the serious conversation that happened before this, please don't do any of these things.
No.
Just a PSA.
Right. Yeah, we should disclaim that.
Actually, the video, Laura, of learning how to do knife skills, that would be useful for the show notes.
It's a bunch of stuff from Not Another Cooking Show, but I will find one of his original ones, because like, so I'm going to try to describe it verbally, but like, the idea is that when you're putting your hand on the thing that you're cutting, like an onion, you actually tuck your fingers a little under so that your knuckles come out, so that when you have a chef's blade, which have the really wide metal part and then the sharp edge of the blade, that's just rubbing against your knuckles. There's nothing sharp anywhere near your skin. And so it also helps you cut more cleanly, like in a straight line. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, I always eyeballed it, and so like everything was always lopsided. Now things are actually like cubed nicely when I actually spend the time to cut something, which is really kind of a nice, helpful thing.
Nice.
So yeah, I'll try to find that video.
Awesome.
So before we get off the onion topic, so the way I do it is, first of all, have a sharp knife. That's the most important thing. And then mm-hmm. when you're cutting the onion, you want to, I think the right term is slice. So you move the knife forward as you cut down. And so you're letting the blade do the work. You're not pushing in, because mm-hmm. the gases that make you cry are because like the cells of the onion are being crushed. So if you don't crush the cells of the onion, you it doesn't release as much gas and you don't cry. So the trick is to not crush, but to cut. And so you do that by not using any force and just letting the slicing motion help the knife go through the onion.
So in like a professional kitchen where they have really, really sharp knives all the time, mm-hmm. they probably don't deal with this as much, do they?
Right. They're using really sharp knives now. And also they're cutting, like they're slicing right versus just chopping down and stuff. And then we can get into which direction you're cutting. Because if you're doing across the onion, that's good if you want the onion to sort of dissolve into your food. Whereas if you're cutting along the poles, that's how you keep the onion whole, like as bigger pieces, especially if you're cooking for a longer time.
What?
Oh boy.
Onions.
No. So like the reason I'm saying this is because like the way that someone taught me, well, Not Another Cooking Show taught me to like dice onions is you first, you take from the pole and you slice along them so you make strips, and then you chop perpendicular to those to dice it.
Yeah, I was talking about like onion slices versus chopped.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Like if you're slicing an onion to saute, the direction you do it drastically affects the texture of the onion.
Okay. I can handle this now. That makes more sense.
In the same way, actually cutting meat across or with the grain changes how it like how the bite is when you chew on it. Anyway, the Suvi kitchen robot is only $399 right now from $800. And so that's not too bad as like a weird kitchen gadget. So if you wanted to give it a shot, like we probably all paid more than that for our first actual sous vide kit back when they were hard to get and expensive.
Sure. True. I'm sure y'all did.
Like I'm talking about like 12 years ago, not recently.
Oh, I'm not that
Back before there was like easy to get like consumer versions.
And hey, if we keep playing our cards right, maybe sous vide will be one of our first sponsors.
That's right.
There we go. There
and
we
will
go.
Get a discount. So everyone tweet at Suvi and tell them about our podcast.
No, please don't. Please don't.
Why the hell are they still called Drunk and Retired?
That's a great question, JJ.
We don't know anymore. Question.
All right. What are people cooking sometime this week?
Well, I'm making my next round of Pandero. So I made this over the break and it was effing phenomenal. I'll throw this in the chat and then I'll put it in the show notes. It's a traditional Christmas bread. That's basically, kind of cake-like. I don't have that star thing at the very bottom. If you click on that link yet, I just put it in a Bundt cake pan. And it took some time, took some effort, but my first couple of shots at it were great, so I want to continue working on it. And I've got a feeling if I really do build skills around this one, this might actually be my Christmas present to people next year, because I can just make a bunch of them and then wrap them in paper and then be like, here, have a Christmas bread.
Kind of happy thing. Holidays.
So JJ, what's the difference between a Pandoro and a panettone?
Yeah, so if you click on that link, it tells you the difference. The short of it is this one's more plain and more closer to
perfect. I love plain.
Yeah, well, it's vanilla and lemon compared to like all the fruit and shit that's in the Italian one.
They're both Italian.
I didn't like. Oh, whatever. but I like this.
Let
one
him have this.
Yeah. It was really good with ice cream too. We threw some ice cream in. Yeah. And, it was great. And, the recipe was one step farther than I do normally with my bread. So I was very happy with it.
All right. So here's what I think it would be amazing for is if you have leftovers, using it to make bread pudding.
Oh yeah. We've done that with not this one, but there's a lot of bread pudding in our household. Yes. What? That's me.
So I had a dish I had in Ukraine a few times. It's kind of like a New Year's Eve kind of dish, but you have it other times as well, called, I can't remember the Ukrainian word for it, but it translates to herring under a fur coat.
That's a great translation.
Right?
That is.
And it's basically a bunch of single ingredient salads that sit on top of each other, and you make them in like a springform cake pan so that like stands up. It almost kind of looks like a cake. And so you start with potatoes on the bottom. So you cook and then grate potatoes, and then you mix them with some seasoning and mayonnaise, and you sort of flatten that into the base. And then you add a bunch of pickled herring to cover that. And then you add a layer of, I can't remember the exact order, but there's a layer of boiled egg that have been grated. There's a layer of onion. There's a layer of grated carrot that's been cooked and then grated. And then there's a layer of grated beets, each of which is mixed with just enough like seasoning and mayonnaise to make them kind of pliable. And then you kind of let it chill for like a day in the fridge, and then you unmold it and you sort of have, it looks like a cake, and you kind of slice into it, and it's pretty delicious. And like the pickled herring on itself is pretty strong, but with the rest of the ingredients, it sort of settles down a bit and anyway, it's quite delicious. And then the other thing I made, sticking to the Ukrainian theme, was Kiev cake, which is a cake that is layers of meringue and sponge cake with mm-hmm. some hazelnuts and some others. And then it's got Russian buttercream, which is basically condensed milk
vodka.
And butter, basically churned together until it gets to like a buttercream type consistency. So I made that just before Christmas and it was pretty delicious. I didn't get the execution quite right. So the meringue didn't stay as dry as I wanted. And the buttercream split a little bit because I'm not used to making that one, but it still tasted mm-hmm. delicious. And then I found the store-bought one. So there's the company that invented it is Roshen, which is a Ukrainian candy place that also makes cakes and stuff. And there's a whole story about how they accidentally invented it because they left the meringue in the oven too long. It was all dried out. So they tried to save it, ended up with this delicious cake. But anyway, it is a very nice cake. So I got the Roshen one afterwards. And I tried it and I was like, I would say flavor wise, I was spot on. So apart from my slight like technical difficulties, I think I did a pretty good job.
Cool.
Fun. And I think I just got permission to make mapo tofu because spicy food is supposed to help induce labor naturally. Oh. And Adele has not been a fan of it since I accidentally destroyed her taste buds last year because even me making it not spicy was still Minnesota extra hot. So it's coming back, my friends. I'm gonna do it properly with like the fermented black beans and try to find some fresh Szechuan peppercorns and kind of go back through Paul's recipe because it was really fun.
So it may end up being like a fine dog. The baby will be in there in the womb with its cup of coffee with everything on fire and be like, this is fine.
yeah, exactly. Hopefully it'll be part of the exit strategy. You're like, wow, it's too spicy in here. I got to get out.
And it'll be a picture
needs
of
milk.
You. Be a picture of you in as the disaster girl meme. Just looking back at the camera and grinning.
It will, actually. That's exactly what I imagined.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, my goodness.
And Laura, what you got going on?
I think this weekend we've talked about maybe trying to get the smoker back up to do maybe some cheese, stuff like that. I also have some fall, I know it's winter, but there's some fall baking stuff downstairs that I haven't got a chance to get to yet. So I kind of want to get to it before it goes bad. And yeah, I don't know if there's any other cooking I'll probably do. I've been making a lot of tea because it's that getting to be that season here in Texas. So I'm very much enjoying getting to dig into my tea stash again for hot tea. So I have my iced teas for the summertime.
Nice.
Yay.
All right, y'all. Well, I guess till next week.
Till next time.
Bye.
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 Dun dun.
That was a stop.